Quarantine the solar system? You mean blockade it, right?
You already have a blockade, and it didn't work. It didn't keep the bad guys out. But that's not the problem now. Now, we want to keep the bad guys in.
We haven't caught anyone running our blockade.
Captain Tom Wesker was commander of the fleet Warshaw had assigned to guard St. Augustine.
Well, that makes sense.
What's that?
It makes sense that you haven't seen them running your blockade. If you had seen them, you might have caught them, and we wouldn't have 500 dead clones on our hands.
That's not fair. We've only been here 2 months. Maybe they got here before we did.
Good point. But unless the enemy landed during the alien occupation, they pretty much had to have arrived on your watch. Look at it this way. You should have an easier time keeping ships on the planet than you did chasing them away. It gives you a smaller area to patrol.
What are you trying to keep on the planet?
The same people we wanted to keep off the planet for the last 2 months.
Who exactly is that?
If I knew who the spec they were, don't you think I'd arrest them? I can tell you this much. They look like us, they talk like us, and they kill senior officers. If I were you, I'd do everything in my power to keep them on the ground. You know, as if the planet were under quarantine.
Yes, sir. Understood, sir.
Also, put every available man on security at all times.
On the planet?
On your ships. I'm betting you've already been infiltrated.
I had traveled from Gobi to St. Augustine on a battleship with a crew of 1,800 enlisted men and 150 officers. I returned on a frigate, a small ship with a crew of 170 men. I felt like I was rowing home on a dinghy. The man I had seen in the restaurant looked like he might have been in his mid-20s, making him slightly on the young side for the enlisted man's navy. We hadn't seen a new cadet since the Mogats destroyed the clone farms 6 years ago. Our youngest clones were 24, and most of our men were in their 30s. One of the benefits of flying in a frigate was that the ship was so small I could assemble my own crew. I had undoubtedly assembled the oldest crew in the short history of the enlisted man's navy. By the time I finished, the youngest man on the ship was in his early 40s. It was possible that some infiltrator might have stowed away aboard the ship, but he would stand out once he left his hidey hole. On the frigate, my quarters were both my billet and my stateroom. It didn't matter much. The time on the ship was short. We spent 15 minutes traveling untold trillions of miles, and then another 2 hours circling Gobi as I considered my options and decided where I should go and what I should do. Admiral Cabot, come in.
Did you send for me, sir?
Have a seat.
Yes, sir.
Let's forget the senior officer stuff for now. I think I may have seen one of their assassins.
On St. Augustine?
Yes, in Petersboro, after I left the morgue. Remember when I went off on my own?
I remember.
I walked around for an hour, then I ended up at a restaurant. There was a man in the restaurant, a clone.
What makes you think he was the killer?
He was alone in the bar. Everyone else came with friends or dates, but he was there alone, looking around the room like a man on a hunt.
Maybe he came looking for a date.
Yeah, maybe. But he wasn't there for the girls. He sat by himself in a corner. He didn't eat. He didn't talk to anybody. He ordered a beer, but he didn't drink it. When he spotted me watching him, he paid his tab and left.
What makes you think he was an assassin?
He left when he spotted me.
Maybe you scared him.
Maybe. But let's go on the assumption that he is a Unified Authority assassin.
Was there anything besides the beer that made you think he was an assassin?
I don't know.
It sounds pretty thin, sir. I mean, what are the odds? The entire Navy uses St. Augustine for R&R. How many bars do you think there are in Petersboro? I bet there are hundreds, maybe even thousands, and here you stepped into the one bar in the entire city where a Unified Authority assassin sits waiting. Do you really think we got that lucky, sir?
You thirsty? I brought a bottle of scotch for the ride.
I'll pass.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world. Maybe it wasn't a coincidence. What if there's a guy like that in every bar in every city on St. Augustine?
I think we would know about something so massive. Sooner or later, somebody is going to notice something like that.
Maybe somebody did notice. Maybe one of the MPs guarding Sunmark got curious, so they killed him. And then they killed off everyone else in the precinct, just in case he told someone. Maybe that's what happened. They killed him, then they killed the others, then they dragged their bodies into the jungle and dissolved them with Noxium.
It's a possibility. That would explain who did it and why.
But you don't think that's what happened?
I don't have any better explanations, but I'm at a disadvantage here. This is the first time you've told me about your mysterious barfly. It doesn't wash, sir. They couldn't land that many replacements on the planet without people noticing.
There are 80,000 clones on St. Augustine taking leave at any moment. Who's going to notice a few hundred infiltrators?
They'd notice if a bunch of clones disappeared.
We found 550 victims, give or take a few. Did anybody notice anything before we started counting bodies? Earth date, November 3, AD, 2517. Location, Terrano. Galactic position, Scutum Crux Arm. I sailed out of the Scutum Crux Arm on a wrecked battleship and returned on a yacht, more or less. I rowed a frigate to Gobi, then requisitioned the Salah-Adeen, a Perseus-class fighter carrier. There were 2,200 Marines stationed on Terrano. The Adeen had room to spare. I toured the Marine complex as the Adeen broadcasted out through a station that was specially programmed for a single broadcast to Terrano. Walking through the barracks, I imagined them filled with men.
General Harris?
The voice of Captain Pete Villanueva spoke to me from a squawk box on the wall. I went to the box.
Harris here.
We're in Scutum Crux space, sir.
What is the situation?
All clear, sir.
Have you made contact?
We reached Port Sebastian. The Marines are expecting you, sir.
Very well. All I need now is a transport and a pilot.
Your staff pilot is ready and waiting for you, sir.
My staff pilot? He might have meant nobles, but to the best of my knowledge, nobles were still on the Kamehameha.
Captain, please send a security detail to the landing bay. Have them seal off the bay and wait for me in the hall.
Yes, sir.
Under no circumstances are they to enter the bay before I arrive.
Aye, aye, sir.
I didn't need to worry about them arriving before me, as the Marine complex was on the same deck as the landing bay. Running through the hall, I arrived in about 3 minutes. My security detail, six men armed with M27s, arrived a few seconds later.
There's a transport waiting for takeoff. The man piloting that transport may be a Unified Authority assassin. I'm going in first. I want you to come in 15 seconds after me. If there's an enemy in there, I want to take him alive.
They answered with nods.
15 seconds. Then you come in with your fingers off your triggers. I don't want you shooting me in the back.
I stepped through the hatch.
General Harris.
Nobles?
He fit the profile of the UA assassins, a clone in his 20s. He was neither heavy nor thin, neither muscular nor frail. Put him in any platoon, and he would blend in. Six M27-carrying MPs charged in behind me and ground to a stop. I did not even need to look back to know they had confused expressions on their faces. They had come in locked and loaded, expecting a fight. Instead, they got a dawdling general and an unarmed man standing at attention.
Are we bringing an escort, sir?
No.
Thus began one of the more dismal missions of my career. I did not expect Philo Hollingsworth to greet me with open arms, but I thought he would be interested in what I had to say. He met me in the lobby of Terrano's new government center. The lobby of the building was a giant cavern paved in black marble and sparsely populated by men in expensive suits. The room could have held 500 people. I saw no more than 200.
Did you really go through that broadcast zone? It wasn't just a trick.
What do you think?
Did you find anyone on the other side?
We were just inside the door. Across the floor, maybe 100 feet away, Doctorow spotted us and started in our direction.
I found Warshaw.
He made it?
He's got a growing empire with 23 planets. Looks like the Unifieds want their planets back.
I don't believe it. You were right about everything.
And then Doctorow was upon us.
Welcome back.
We traded handshakes and glances with about as much affection as boxers touching gloves before a fight. The last time I had checked, Doctorow had been running Norristown out of his house, with his wife snooping over his shoulder. As for this building, I did not notice any cleaning crews in the government complex the last time I came by. Now it had a gleaming chandelier cascading from its ceiling, water fixtures decorating its lobby, acres of shining black marble, and air conditioning.
When did you move here?
This is our new capital building.
For Norristown?
For all of Terrano.
Now you're the governor of the planet. Congratulations on your promotion.
We all have our ambitions, General. You want to conquer Earth? My plans are not nearly so grand. I'll settle for rebuilding Terrano.
We adjourned to the assembly room. We entered the three-story auditorium, in which a lectern and a couple of seats waited on a stage at the bottom of the well. Doctorow led the way down the stairs. He led me to the stage.
Harris, please take a seat.
Behind us, extending out like a small wall, stood the type of raised bench that judges use in courtrooms. The stand rose a full 8 feet above the stage, and Doctorow sat behind it, leaving me alone on display. The audience quietly assembled along the tiers of the auditorium. Were they Doctorow's appointees or elected officials? How had so many changes happened so quickly? I'd only been gone a week. Doctorow must have started the ball rolling before I left. Once everyone was seated, Doctorow started the meeting by congratulating me on my safe return. He assured me that the assembled body had been briefed about the circumstances of my departure and that the meeting was nothing more than a briefing.
We're simply curious about what you found.
Instead of letting me speak, Doctorow invited the gallery to ask questions. Not a moment passed before five or six people stood in place, signaling that they wanted the floor.
General, you left to find your fleet. Did you find it?
Yes.
Was it destroyed?
No. I returned on the Salah ad-Din, one of the ships from the fleet.
The Salah ad-Din, General, isn't that a fighter carrier?
That's right.
Is there any particular reason you chose to return in a fighter carrier, General?
Are you asking if there was a reason other than its being a ship capable of traveling through space?
I am trying to ascertain why you chose to travel in one of the largest and most aggressive ships in your fleet when you returned to Terrano. Are you trying to send us a message, General Harris?
Please, we are getting ahead of ourselves. Give the General a chance to explain what he found on his mission. I apologize for this outburst, General. Please, tell us about the status of your fleet.
I no longer gave a damn about getting along with the Right Reverend Colonel Ellery Doctorow, Governor of Norristown and apparently Emperor of Terrano, or with the pompous men and women who made up his choir, so I told it to them straight.
The enlisted man's empire controls 23 planets and 13 fleets. The Empire has not attacked Earth, but no one is ruling the possibility out.
Are you saying the Clone Navy is preparing to attack Earth?
No, I did not say that. I simply stated that attacking Earth is an option.
A woman ran down the stairs.
But you can't do that! That would be an act of aggression! The clones would be declaring war on
their... Let me make this clear to you. We did not break off from the Unified Authority. They abandoned us. We owe them nothing. They abandoned their clone military. They abandoned their outworld territories. They discarded their fleets.
You say you have 23 planets in your empire? Did you conquer them, or did they join willingly?
No one held a gun to anyone's head.
Is it still your goal to conquer Earth?
I am not the one who would make that decision.
I'm sure you're an important man in your empire. Do you want revenge? Conquering Earth makes no sense. Why declare war on the Unified Authority? Why fight a war at all? The Unified Authority is not your enemy.
I would not call them my friends.
You came in a fighter carrier. Do you plan to force us to join your empire?
No. You're welcome to join, I suppose.
We'll consider your offer, General Harris, but I don't expect the people of Terrano will want to join you.
No, I suppose not.
My vote will be against any form of treaty. I will resign before I sign a treaty with the clones or with the Unified Authority. And I will do everything in my power to ensure that Terrano remains a neutral planet.
Not even for protection.
General, men like you bring wars upon yourselves. We don't need protection. Take away the armies and the battleships, and we won't need to protect ourselves. Nations, empires, armies, we don't want any of that on Terrano. We'll vote on your offer, General Harris, but I can tell you the outcome already.
You probably can.
My vote is for you to take your Marines and go away.
I did not hate these people, but I did not care what became of them. What should I have called it? An interrogation? An inquisition? Doctorow might have described it as a hearing, but that sounded too benevolent by my book. I was glad when it ended. As we drove away from the government center, Hollingsworth asked a question that came so out of the blue that it took me aback.
What if it came to a choice between her and us?
You sound like a jealous girlfriend. The relationships do not overlap. She's my girl, you're my Marines. It's completely different.
Not all that different. You screw her, you screw us. It's a different kind of screwing, but you're still screwing us.
Listen here, you self-pitying waste of speck. You see these stars? You may not like it, but these stars make me a more important person than you. You got that? You've got a bird and I've got stars, and that means you'll either show me respect or I will throw your ass in the brig.
Sorry, sir.
Get this through your skull, Hollingsworth. I did not start the war with the Unified Authority. If you haven't figured that out, it's time that you did. They sent us out here to use us for target practice. You got that?
Yes, sir.
I wasn't the one who started the war. So if you're gonna blame me for something, blame me for saving the specking fleet.
Begging your pardon, General? But the way this Marine sees it, Admiral Warshaw saved the fleet when he started up the broadcast zone.
Who came up with the idea of salvaging broadcast equipment in the first place, asshole? Who came up with the idea of hijacking those self-broadcasting battleships? Hollingsworth went back to staring straight ahead. He did not answer my questions. By the way, I hope you don't plan on staying on Terrano. Your pal Doctorow told me to pack up my Marines and leave. More silence. Turn up here.
I thought you wanted to head to base.
I changed my mind. I knew the way to Ava's house like I knew the scars on the back of my hands. And I told Hollingsworth every turn well in advance.
You want me to send a jeep for you, sir?
No, Colonel. I think I'll find my own way back to the base. I had just traveled across three galactic arms, only to find myself stuck in a suburb without a phone or a jeep. The house was completely dark. I tried the door, but it was locked. For no real reason, I knocked again. No one answered. I walked to the edge of her front porch, sat, and waited. Time passed. Night turned to early morning. By the time she finally arrived, the first streaks of sunlight showed in the sky. The car pulled into the driveway, stopped, and Ava climbed out of the passenger side. She started toward the front door, then she saw me and froze. A look of anger replaced her surprised expression. Why did I come back? I spotted the silhouette of a man in the driver's seat. I wished I hadn't returned. Ava and I stood staring at each other for a few seconds.
You're back.
I told you I would come for you.
I'm sorry.
I was only gone for a week.
Harris, we need to talk.
No, we don't. I stepped off the porch and walked past the car, not even bothering to look inside.
Where are you going?
I did not answer her. I had no idea where I would go.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too. I reached the end of the block before I realized that I had no way of calling for a ride. Deciding that a good walk would give me time to think things through, I turned the corner and started down the hill. I wanted to be alone with my anger, so I walked. A few moments later, a Marine sped by in a jeep going at least 80 miles per hour. He spotted me, and his head turned to track me as he drove past. I expected him simply to drive away, but he didn't. He cut across several empty lanes, then drifted in my direction, pulling to the side of the road about 10 feet ahead of me.
General Harris?
Yes?
Colonel Hollingsworth sent me to pick you up, sir.
Did he? Well, that's excellent.
Yes, sir.
Instead of climbing into the rear of the jeep, as I might normally have done, I stepped into the passenger seat. Where are we going?
The Colonel is waiting for you at Fort Sebastian, sir.
What is your name, Sergeant?
Lewis, sir.
Is that your first name or your last?
It's my last name, sir. My first name is Kit. Kit Lewis.
Well, Kit Lewis, you just missed the road to Fort Sebastian. We had actually passed the turn 2 miles back, but I decided to wait until we had passed any likely detours before mentioning it.
A work crew is laying a cable on the main road, sir. The regular roads are closed.
Is that so?
Yes, sir. We need to take a service route.
I see. It must be quite a project. This detour of yours is taking us pretty far out of the way.
Yes, sir. Oh, we're not going to Fort Sebastian, sir. Colonel Hollingsworth wants to meet you at the airfield.
So he's at the airfield? I could have sworn you said we were meeting at Fort Sebastian.
Did I? I always do that, sir. I was thinking about Fort Sebastian when I meant to say we were meeting the Colonel at the airfield, and I switched it around.
We were driving at 80 miles per hour. A few miles ahead of us, the edge of the airfield was visible behind a row of small buildings. I pretended not to notice it. we passed two roads that wound around to the airfield. Lewis did not slow down as we reached the third. I doubted he would slow down at the fourth.
How long have you been here, kid?
6 years, sir.
I'm not asking how long Kit Lewis has been here. I'm asking how long you have been here.
3 days.
If he had a gun, he made no move to draw it. He did not need to worry about me. Traveling in a Jeep at 80 miles per hour, I would not attack the driver.
How did you get here? You're a long way from Earth.
Are you going to interrogate me right up to the end?
It's better than dying curious.
Sorry to disappoint you, General, but I didn't come here to answer questions.
I suppose not. But out of curiosity, how did you get here?
I don't know the name of the ship.
We were rapidly approaching the east end of town. The buildings became smaller, and the lots became larger. Civilization gave way to countryside. We passed a stand of trees. Off in the distance, I saw hills and forests. The end of the road.
Are you working for the Unified Authority?
Sure.
He slowed to 30 miles per hour as we approached the trees.
So you're not Avatari?
What the spec is Avatari?
Alien.
I'm property of the Unified Authority Marines, just like you.
You're a different make.
He slowed the Jeep to 15 miles per hour as he turned onto a small dirt road. When we bounced over a bump, I grabbed Lewis behind the neck and slammed his face into the steering wheel. Then I slammed the bottom edge of my fist into the base of his skull. During the moment that he blacked out, I slipped the gear into park, and the wheels locked as we skidded into a ditch. I watched Lewis's already bloody face slam into the wheel a second time, tearing gashes across his forehead and eyebrows. I climbed out of the Jeep, pulling Lewis out as well, carrying him away from the ditch and slinging his limp ass down on the hard forest floor. I checked his pockets. He'd come unarmed. No gun, no knife.
Get up, asshole.
You kick me again, Harris, and I'll break your specking legs.
I don't think so. How many of you are there?
I don't know.
My next kick was not to the ribs. It was a roundhouse, and it struck him across the cheek.
I'm gonna break your arms and legs and your ribs before I kill you.
I don't think you understand what's going on here. See now, I am the one standing, and you are the one on the ground who just got his face kicked. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I see it, you are in the shithouse, pal.
It looks that way. Stop kicking me.
I don't think so.
You won't get anything out of me if I'm dead.
Tell me what I need to know, and maybe we can both walk out of here.
Why the speck would I let you walk?
He rolled backward toward the Jeep and slid into the trench head first. I felt sorry for the bastard until I saw how quickly he sprang to his feet. The expression on his face looked more animal than human. His eyes focused on me to the exclusion of anything else. His lips formed a sneer. Lewis lunged at me quickly, crashing into me with all of his weight. I worked a knee loose and drove it into his ribs. That slowed him, and I threw him off me. He recovered more quickly than I did. As I tried to clear my head, he jumped to his feet and came at me again. I struck his broken ribs with the heel of my right hand. He grabbed me and threw me backward to the ground, then stomped a heavy boot into my gut, knocking the fight and the air out of my lungs. Lewis dropped a knee into my chest and wrapped his fingers around my throat.
I'm gonna enjoy this, Harris.
Lewis flew off me, smashing into a tree a few feet away. A quarter of his head was missing, from the right eye to the top. A few moments passed before my savior stepped into my view. 7 feet tall, thick as an oak tree and just as stout, his shaved head as bare as a billiard ball, and his skin as dark as mahogany, Ray Freeman came and stood over me, his sniper rifle hanging loose in his right hand.
Nice shot. You could have popped him before he started choking me.
I wanted to see how you would do.
How did I do?
Freeman had only parked a few dozen yards from the Jeep. But I covered the distance like an old man suffering acute appendicitis.
Oh. So what brought you to this neck of the woods?
Freeman did not respond.
How did you find me?
I followed the clone.
Was there any reason why you followed that particular clone?
We reached the car. Anyone else might have opened the door for his poor, crippled friend. I opened the door and jerked my head back toward the trees.
I want to bring him along.
Put him in the trunk.
I slung Lewis over my shoulder like a dock worker carrying a sack of potatoes. I tossed him into the trunk.
How did you know where to find me?
I told you. I followed the clone.
There are a whole lot of clones living in Fort Sebastian. How did you know which one to follow?
I followed him here from Earth.
He said he arrived 3 days ago. Freeman did not respond. I took his silence as confirmation.
When I heard the Navy was sending an assassin to Terranel, I figured he was coming after you.
The Navy thinks I'm dead. They all think I'm dead.
There's no one else on Terranel worth shooting.
So why send someone now? They could have sent someone to finish me off 5 months ago.
They saw the anomaly.
They saw the anomaly. From the broadcast zone. From when I broadcast it out.
The Navy has spy ships cruising your territory. They have satellites monitoring your broadcast stations.
Spy ships and satellites. I had gone through that broadcast zone a week ago, and the clone in the trunk landed on Terranel a few days later. What are we dealing with? Should I send some fighters out to look for the satellite?
Don't bother. The satellites are too small to locate.
And the spy ships?
You don't see them unless they want you to.
We drove on in silence. Freeman brought us to Fort Sebastian. Once we were through the gates, we drove to the administration building, where Hollingsworth and a small group of junior officers waited to meet us. Hollingsworth walked up to the car and took a look at my face.
Let me guess, the big guy caught you stealing his car? No? Well, don't tell me. Your girlfriend hit you with a shovel.
I climbed out of the car and opened the trunk.
You think I look bad? Have a look at the other guy.
I reached in, grabbed the foe Sergeant Lewis by his collar and belt, and flipped him onto the ground.
What the hell?
I'll tell you about it sometime. In the meantime, would you mind putting him on ice? I want a coroner to have a look at him.
Is he one of ours?
He said his name was Lewis. Sergeant Kit Lewis. Ever heard of him?
No.
That's funny. He swore you sent him to pick me up at Ava's.
I didn't send anyone after you.
No? How do you know where to find me?
A lot of people knew where you went. I mean, it wasn't classified information. I mentioned it to... Why'd you kill him?
I didn't kill him.
Freeman did. Ray Freeman came out. The top of the car came up to my chest. It came up to his stomach. He stood there, hulking, huge, intimidating. Silent.
The late sergeant said you wanted to meet with me, then he drove me out to the woods west of town. That was when things got physical.
Shit.
Wrap him up and throw him in a cooler. There's something special about this clone. We're going to need an autopsy to find out what it is.
Yes, sir.
Something else. If this son of a bitch called himself Sergeant Lewis, that means there's probably a dead Sergeant Lewis lying around here somewhere. Send out a team. I want to know what happened to him.
Ellery Doctorow summoned me to his office, the political equivalent of a master whistling for his dog. As I entered the office, Doctorow met me at the door and shook my hand. Not even a second passed before he noticed the breakage on my face. How could he miss it? He pursed his lips, but he said nothing.
General Harris, I am glad you came.
I had the impression attendance was mandatory.
Oh, please. You have 2,200 fighting marines and enough weapons to destroy this planet 3 times over. You don't take orders from me, and we both know it.
Doctorow sat down behind his fortress of a desk. I sat in the wooden leather seat in front of the desk.
The Planetary Council rejected your proposal, General. We won't be joining your empire. We would like you and your marines to leave Terrano as soon as possible.
Are we making way for the Unified Authority?
No. When and if they contact us, we will give them the same answer we gave you. Terrano is a neutral planet.
I see.
A few council members felt we should join the Unified Authority.
They wanted to join the Unified Authority.
After we discussed the issues, there was a nearly unanimous vote to remain neutral. In the meantime, we all agreed that we wanted you and your Marines to leave our planet. I've always been upfront with you, Harris. You and your Marines and your warships represent nothing but a threat to us. I mean, look at you. You've been here one night, and what happened?
I was attacked.
By my people?
No.
He said nothing. He did not need to say anything.
So, you're done with us? That's it.
What are you looking for, General? Do you want me to thank you for rescuing us?
We also restored your power and fixed your roads. The Corps of Engineers military, too.
I wanted to speak with you about that. As we discussed before, we would like you to leave your engineers here on Terrano. We could use their help for another year or two.
You certainly have a set of balls on you.
General, there is no cause for profanity.
You don't want me around, but you want me to leave my engineers.
Engineers aren't trained killers. They pose no threat to our goals. Engineers don't carry guns, Harris. You and your men and the whole military way. You bring trouble on yourselves. Look at you. You're like a lightning rod. You attract violence.
That's a bit simplistic. We didn't bring the aliens.
Yes, you did. They came back when you arrived.
They never left. They were always here, always destroying the planet. You just didn't know it.
Have you had a look at yourself in the mirror this morning? Your face is covered with bruises. I'm sure it wasn't your fault. You were attacked. I understand that. But what happened to the men who attacked you?
One man.
Where is he now? Is he dead? Did you kill him?
Dead, but I didn't kill him.
You didn't kill him, but he's still dead. That is why we don't want you or your kind on our planet.
How will you protect yourselves?
Protect ourselves from what? With you and your Marines off the planet, we won't need to defend ourselves. Without you, we'll be safe.
What happens when the Unified Authority arrives?
With you gone, they won't have any reason to come here. We're not at war with them.
Do you think they will respect your sovereignty?
Yes, I believe they will. Look, we don't want you here. I really don't see that there is anything else for us to discuss.
What happens if the aliens come back?
That's a possibility, I suppose. Personally, I am less concerned about that possibility than I am about getting you and your men off my planet.
You didn't feel that way when we chased them away.
If you recall, we did feel that way. We asked you to go away. I'm glad you ignored our request, but we didn't want you here in the first place. And now, General Harris, it is time for you to leave.
We'll leave, but we are taking our engineers with us.
Have you asked them what they want? I have. I took the liberty of speaking with Lieutenant Mars last night.
You ran an end run to my engineers? Have you spoken with anyone else? Perhaps you want my pilot.
I spoke with Ava this morning.
You spoke with Ava?
She wants to stay.
I saw her last night. I got the same feeling. Hollingsworth would probably stay if you asked him.
I don't plan on extending that invitation.
So, I guess we are done.
Not yet. What are your plans, General? The Council would prefer for you to leave within the week.
It won't take long for us to pack.
And your engineers?
I'll speak to Mars. They can decide for themselves.
Good man.
Ava looked so pretty in her cream-colored blouse and sky-blue skirt. The blouse was loose, but it showed off her figure.
I'm leaving.
Elle told me.
Elle was the name Dr. O's closest associates used to address him. Apparently, Ava had joined that elite circle of friends.
So I guess that's it. I'm done here.
Tears formed in the corners of her eyes.
You can come with me.
And live on a battleship? Honey, I've done that before. I think I'm done with big guns and seamen. I can't come with you, Wason. There's nothing for me out there.
I'd be there.
You? You were never there for me. After the Unified Authority attacked, when you were in the hospital and you were so weak, I thought you needed me. I thought maybe we had a chance. But once you got better, you started looking for a way off the planet.
I told you I wouldn't leave you here.
You never needed me. You had your big plans and your Marines, and that was everything you needed. You never even pretended to need me.
So when did he happen?
I fell in love with him while you were planning how to escape Terrano.
In love?
I'm sorry.
Did you ever love me?
Back in the beginning? You asked me how you compared to other guys. Do you remember that? You are the only one who ever broke my heart.
This was my day for goodbyes. Within the last 2 hours, I'd already said goodbye to Ava and Ellery Doctorow. In a few more hours, I'd bid a happy farewell to Terrano, which had lately replaced Gobi as my least favorite planet in the galaxy. Now Freeman was leaving. I looked at Freeman's Piper Bandit, a private commuter craft that the Unified Authority had outfitted with a tiny broadcast engine. Ray Freeman was not fat, but his 7-foot frame was thick and filled with muscle. To wedge himself into that tiny cockpit, he would need to curl his legs in odd angles under the instrumentation. As we stood beside the Bandit, I gave it a dubious glance. That cockpit would be a tight fit for me, and Freeman had 9 inches and 100 pounds on me.
Where'd you get this?
I took it from a clone.
This is what infiltrator clones fly? No shit? Did this one belong to the guy who tried to kill me?
No.
You mean there's another one in Norristown?
Freeman did not answer. If Freeman had the plane, the guy who was supposed to fly it was dead. There had to be at least one more of these planes hidden somewhere around Norristown. I wondered how many I would find when I searched St. Augustine. Now we had something to look for. Clones traveling in Piper Bandits.
How does it fly?
Slow. 500,000 miles per hour.
What are you doing here?
Besides saving your ass?
Are you here for money or revenge? You didn't come all this way just to save me.
We were partners.
You didn't come here for old time's sake. How did you know about the clone in the first place? You wouldn't have known about him unless you were already in the war. What's your stake?
Freeman said nothing, and I would not push it. When the time came, he would tell me his reasons. He was ruthless and violent, but he also lived by a personal code of conduct. I trusted him.
You can't fly into the broadcast zone. You know that, right?
Again, he did not answer. It was a stupid question.
It's a one-way zone. It goes straight to Providence Cree. Any chance that I will see you there?
Freeman opened the door of his plane and folded himself into the cockpit. Once he was in, he snaked a hand out to close the door.
How do I find you?
There's a restaurant called Scrubs on St. Augustine. I'll be there next Thursday.
It doesn't sound very private.
So we meet and go for a walk.
He nodded and closed the door of his plane. The Bandit was small and he was a giant. He filled the cockpit as snug as a bullet in the chamber of a gun. Freeman had found his Bandit on a civilian airfield on the south side of town. The south and west sides of Norristown had taken the brunt of the war against the aliens. The Corps of Engineers, formerly my Corps of Engineers, began restoring the west side as soon as we liberated the planet. The south side, however, remained in tatters.
If I were trying to hide a plane near Norristown, I would hide it in the wreckage of a southern suburb.
I borrowed a car and drove around town. I stared out at the broken buildings and empty space as I headed north. Then I saw a massive work project, the Norris Lake Tunnels. The southern edge of Norristown fronted on a large lake that sparkled like a giant mirror across the landscape. At one corner of the lake, a pair of tunnels grew out of the water like a set of sleeping leviathans, their 4-lane mouths stitched shut by lattice works of scaffolding and heavy equipment. Driving from the south side of town to the governmental seat took 15 minutes. I started in a place of ruins and ended in a canyon of marble and glass. I parked my car and went to speak with Dr. Rowe. I made it as far as his reception office before I was stopped by a snooty kid in a nice suit and silk tie. As far as he was concerned, he was as close to Dr. O as I was going to get.
What can I do for you?
You can tell Colonel Dr. O...
A President Dr. O.
Excuse me?
His title is President.
Oh, I see. Well, that's different. I had no idea. You can tell Colonel Dr. O that I am here and wish to see him.
The President is a busy man.
Yes, so am I.
Perhaps if you have a message,
I just told you my message. I am here and I wish to see him.
Perhaps you would like to tell me what this is about?
If I wanted to tell you why I was here, I would have already done so.
If you would prefer to write
a... I wanted to send the President a letter, I would have written one. I'll tell him myself.
I started for the door to the offices.
Hey, wait,
the kid threw himself in front of me as the guards from the entrance came trotting across the lobby. Suddenly, the door to Dr. O's office flew open.
Are you quite finished, General Harris?
Do you see anybody bleeding?
That is precisely why we want you off our planet.
You know what? I can't wait to leave.
What do you need, Harris?
I came here to do you a favor, but you probably don't want anything from someone like me.
No, I probably do not.
I came to give you an escape hatch, in case the aliens ever return.
Perhaps we should speak in my office.
He turned to leave without speaking, and I followed, like an obedient dog. Dr. O returned to his seat behind his desk.
How are your preparations going?
I hope to be out of here tonight.
Well, that is good news.
Listen, there's a small plane hidden somewhere in Norristown, a Piper Bandit. If I had to guess, I would say it's somewhere just south of town.
Why should I care about a small plane?
Because it can reach Earth.
How is that possible?
It's self-broadcasting.
A self-broadcasting plane?
It's very small, just a two-seater, and the broadcast engine is only good for one use. If the aliens come back, you can use it to send for help.
I appreciate your telling me about this. Now, if you could direct us to the plane before its owner returns...
I wouldn't worry about that.
No?
The original pilot will be leaving with me and my men.
There was not a single trained surgeon in the entire enlisted man's navy. We had medical technicians who could set broken bones, remove a bullet, or treat a burst appendix. But medical school was the domain of natural-born officers. The closest clones got to that kind of education was training as a nurse. I didn't need a surgeon to run the autopsy, but I wanted someone who knew his way around a corpse. I needed someone with the right eyes and skill set to examine the body of the late foe Sergeant Kit Lewis. Someone who could tell me what the security posts had been missing.
I don't know the first thing about forensics.
The speaker was the chief medical officer of the Salah ad-Din. We were in sickbay. The body, still wrapped in a self-chilling body bag, lay on the table before us.
Understood.
There he was, Sergeant Lewis, his remaining eye staring straight ahead, the jagged remains of his skull poking out from areas where his face had shriveled.
Want my official opinion about what killed him?
I know what killed him. I was there. What I want to know is what makes him different than everyone else.
Half his skull is missing. That's different.
Besides that,
he's exactly like everyone else. He's a clone.
This boy was different. I want to know why.
I left the sick bay and walked to the bridge. Captain Villanueva sat waiting for me when I arrived.
I hear you brought luggage aboard my ship. A dead man. I just got a call from sickbay. They say you dropped off a dead guy. What do you want with a dead clone?
He's got secrets.
What kind of secrets?
If I knew, I wouldn't bother lugging him around.
Yes, sir.
As we spoke, I saw officers glancing in our direction. There was no privacy on the bridge of the ad-Din.
Is there somewhere else we can speak?
Villanueva nodded and led me to a closet-sized conference room off the bridge floor.
What is the status of our evacuation?
Your Marines are on board, sir.
All of them?
All 2,200 men are accounted for, sir. Are you sure you want to leave all that equipment behind?
The Marine compound on this ship is fully stocked.
Aren't we arming a potential enemy?
You see Terrano as a potential enemy? It's an undeveloped planet with leaders who want to create a utopia. Hell, the locals probably don't even want our guns. I've got more important things on my mind.
I did. I had a complement of 2,200 Marines that needed screening. We would leave for St. Augustine immediately, but I would keep my men under quarantine until I had searched them for infiltrators. With that many men, it could take a full day to check them all out. I gave Villanueva the order to take us to St. Augustine and excused myself. I decided to rest for a few hours. Then I would check my troops for intruders. Then I would return to St. Augustine. I turned off the lights and lay down for a nap, wondering what secrets the autopsy would reveal. My thoughts ran their course. I drifted into a light sleep. If the man had waited a few more seconds, he might have caught me fast asleep instead of just dozing off. I slipped off the bed. He had his gun ready when he slipped through the door. He must have thought he'd found an empty room. He stepped in and closed the door behind him, pausing when he saw my unmade rack. Peering from a gap between my desk and my bed, I saw the man's legs and the silenced pistol he held in front of him. His gun at the ready, the man took a step toward my bed.
You might as well come out. I know you're here, Harris. I saw you come in.
I did not believe him. I sat quiet and waited. Hidden by the desk, I managed to crawl along the far side of the bed toward the bathroom.
I can see you.
The stupid son of a bitch had his back to me when he said that. He was aiming his gun into my closet when I lunged at him from the door of the head. I grabbed his gun hand with both of my hands as my momentum slammed both of us into my tiny work desk. I slid to the floor and grabbed the dropped pistol. He kicked me across the jaw, but I held on to the gun.
The fight was as good as over. He kicked me in the chest, sending me to the floor. Then he bolted from the room. I took a moment to recover, then I leaped to my feet and ran through the door. By the time I reached the hall, the speedy bastard was gone. I reported the attack and placed the ship on alert, even though I knew it was a waste of energy. Captain Villanueva placed security posts throughout the Ardeen. He set up security cameras and posted MPs to guard vital areas. That night, I received a message from Warshaw summoning his admirals to Gobi for a summit. As the highest-ranking officer in the EM Marines, I was required to attend. St. Augustine would have to wait. Screening my men would have to wait as well. They would be trapped on the Ardeen with an infiltrator in their midst. I had Villanueva send a transport to retrieve Cabot, then we set off for Gobi. I brought the dead sergeant with me to the summit. I wheeled the corpse on a gurney. I found Nobles and Cabot when I arrived at the landing bay. They met me as I came up to the transport ramp.
Sir, this Marine doesn't mean any disrespect, but that body bag looks full.
A coroner is going to have a look at him while we're on Gobi.
Well, from what this Marine has heard, sir, there are plenty of dead men at Gobi Station. Do you have any idea what killed them?
He did,
sir.
Before I bagged him, our passenger was a Unified Authority infiltrator clone. How soon can we go wheels up?
Whenever you're ready, sir.
I'm ready. The summit began the next day. Warshaw kicked the meeting off with a banquet. I sent Cabot in my place and used the time to hold a summit of my own in the morgue. Warshaw had brought two coroners in from Morrow Town, the capital of Gobi. When I entered the morgue, I found them hard at work, standing over gleaming steel trays holding carefully washed body parts. In the background, Sergeant Kit Lewis's cadaver lay partially skinned and disassembled. It reminded me of the holographic, visible man display my teacher used in physiology class. The coroners had peeled the skin from Lewis's right cheek and pulled the pipes from his throat. The skin and ribs had been removed from the left side of his chest, revealing layers of soft pink meat. Any blood had been washed away. The cavity that once held his heart now sat empty like a secret compartment in a waxwork dummy.
Have you found anything?
The taller of the two men, a man in his 40s with bushy red hair and round glasses, spoke first.
Were you the one who brought him in?
Yes.
The second man was a pudgy kid who stood no more than 5 feet and 5 inches.
It was the gunshot that killed him.
Yes, I was there. What else can you tell me?
Were you the one who shot him?
I didn't pull the trigger.
Was this an execution?
No.
You were putting him out of his misery, right?
You're jumping to conclusions, Sam. All he said was that it wasn't an execution.
What are you talking about?
The older coroner pointed to a spot on the cadaver where the ribs had been cut away.
This fellow was badly beaten. When I first saw him, I thought he'd been hit by a car, but then I got a closer look at the damage. Was he tortured?
The younger man picked bone fragments out of a dish. Some of the pieces were an inch long. Some were shorter.
These are pieces of his ribs. We pulled them out of his lungs. His liver was so badly traumatized, it was leaking like a sponge.
Injured that badly?
Not just injured, he was dying.
Aren't there laws against torturing prisoners? Do you know who did this? It's inhuman.
No one tortured him.
What happened?
He got in a fight. All things considered, I'd say he won it.
I assume you were involved?
Yes.
This man was in no condition to defend himself at the time of his death. Many of his bones were broken, and his internal organs were hemorrhaging. He had a collapsed lung. He could not defend himself, not with a collapsed lung. I doubt he even had the strength to stand. General, you didn't need to shoot him. If you'd given him another minute or two, he would have bled to death.
If he'd had another minute or two, he would have taken me with him.
That simply isn't possible.
What else have you found? Have you taken a DNA sample?
DNA? You're joking, right?
I'm not.
You brought us here to check his DNA? He's a clone. He's a Unified Authority military clone. He has the exact same DNA stuff as any other soldier. It's the most common DNA in the galaxy.
There's got to be something more. Is there some way his DNA could have been altered?
Alter it to do what? I mean, look at this guy. He's a normal, garden-variety clone. The only thing different about him is that he got pounded into mush and half of his frigging head is missing.
Sam, read back what we have so far.
The younger man tapped a computer screen.
Subject, male. Unified Authority military clone. Approximate age, 28.
weight at time of autopsy, 168 pounds. With his brains and organs intact, he'd probably go 180. Hair, brown. Eye, brown.
Yes, I see that. If that was all I was looking for, I would not have asked for your help.
What are you looking for?
You see those broken bones? I did that to him. I kicked him, and he got up. So I kicked him again. I felt his ribs go, but he still got up. It didn't matter what I did to him, he just kept coming at me. The last time I hit him, it was like he didn't even have any ribs. It was like hitting a water bag. Do you know what he did when I hit him that time?
Collapsed to the ground and coughed up blood?
He lunged at me, threw me down, and started strangling me.
I don't blame him.
You say he was dying. You say he was bleeding internally. Fine, I believe you. That makes him even more dangerous because he still almost killed me.
He's dead now.
He's a specking clone! They can make more of him! This man damn near beat me to death when he was supposedly bleeding to death. I want to know how the hell he did that. Pull his genes apart under a microscope. Run chemical tests on what's left of his brains. I don't care what you do, but get me answers.
Maybe he had a surge of adrenaline.
Look, there's got to be something different going on here. I need you to find out what it is.
We began the summit with reports from the 13 fleets. Unified Authority Navy cruisers had been spotted throughout our territory. They may have been testing our security measures. They may have been spying on us. Cruisers were small and fast, better suited for hit-and-run tactics than confrontations. Phantom UA ships had been spotted in all six arms and near most of our 23 planets. We never got more than a brief glimpse of them, and they were always cruisers. The most sightings occurred around St. Augustine and Olympus Cree, the only two planets we held in the Orion arm. Apparently, there had been dozens of incidents around St. Augustine. Admiral Glenn Nelson, commander of the Orion Inner Fleet, shared his opinions freely.
The Unifieds want Orion back because we're too close to Earth. They're going to try to run us out of the Orion arm, gutless pricks. We should take the fight to them, end the war once and for all.
Have any of you gotten close enough to fire at one of their cruisers?
I got within a million miles. We were down to 650,000 when the ship broadcasted out.
Was she one of the new ships or an older model?
New. We got a signature reading from its shields.
Did you have enough guns to win if she stood her ground?
Three carriers and a battleship. Wouldn't have been much of a fight.
She broadcasted in 5 million miles off Donwin Cree. We had four ships in the area. We were almost on top of her.
But she got away.
There was one exception. One of the Unified Authority ships put up a brief fight in the Norma arm. Norma was the innermost arm, the vortex of the six spiral arms, or in sailor terms, the asshole of the galaxy.
If they want Norma, we should give it to them.
So you think they're up to something? What are they up to? We know they're watching us. Obviously, they're infiltrating us with assassins. Are they running scared? Are they planning an attack?
They're going to attack us. Sooner or later, they are going to attack us. They have to. They don't have a choice.
They don't want to fight us.
Admiral Swift was the officer in charge of guarding the space around Olympus Cree.
Those are cruisers they're sending. Cruisers are the most expendable ships in the UA Navy. I bet they even have clone crews flying them, the bastards. If they wanted to fight, they'd send carriers and battleships. They're running scared.
So why are they spying on us?
Because they're scared, sir. They want to make sure we're not coming after them.
Oh, bullshit! They're planning an attack!
You don't know your shit from your ass, Nelson. We're talking about Alden Brocius. I've seen rabbits with bigger balls than Brocius. The bastard is gonna play it safe as long as he can. He'll send scouts to make sure we're not planning anything. Then he'll wait until he has the biggest fleet and the most guns before he commits. That son of a bitch will take us into the next century before he attacks. Guys like Brocius don't make their move till they're sure they'll win.
I sat through the meeting, biding my time, speculating about the cadaver in the morgue. When speakers droned on too long, I let my thoughts wander to Ava. I listened for items of interest as the admirals pontificated, but they were talking Navy. I spoke Marine. When the meeting adjourned for lunch, I found a quiet table where I hoped to sit alone. I did not have the table to myself for long. Cabot came to join me. Like any successful entourage officer, he knew how to read his benefactor. He instinctively knew that I did not feel like talking, so he sat and ate, silent and serene. A few moments later, Warshaw slid into the seat beside Cabot.
Harris, I get the feeling you've been avoiding me.
Avoiding you? Why would I do that?
You tell me.
Nothing comes to mind.
Made any progress on your investigation?
Some.
Okay. I want you to present tomorrow. Tell us what you got so far.
I won't have much to talk about.
Maybe you can tell us what happened to your face. That should be a fascinating story.
As a matter of fact, that's not a bad idea.
And you brought a stiff with you?
Yeah, he's down in the morgue.
One of ours?
Theirs. Our first confirmed infiltrator.
And he's a clone?
He was. Now he's a cadaver.
Sounds to me like you got a lot to talk about. Look, Harris, right now you're the highest ranking target in the enlisted man's empire. I bet you have some harrowing tales.
After that, we mostly ate in silence. Just as I finished my lunch, one of Cabot's lieutenants came to deliver a note. Cabot read it and passed it on to me. It was from Villanueva, informing me that his MPs had located a suspicious clone on the Ad-Din. The note ended with an offer to detain the man. I wrote,
"Keep him bottled up. I am on my way."
I sent the note back.
"I may be late to the next meeting. Something important has come up."
"Something you can discuss in your briefing?"
"If everything goes right, we'll be doing show and tell instead of a lecture."